At Absolute Protection Group, we specialise in domestic, commercial and industrial electrical, fire and security systems, ensuring the highest quality of service and safety for all your needs. Let us be your trusted partner. Contact us today for a consultation, as if you want protection, you want Absolute Protection. Go to absolute-group.co.uk or call 01622 437838. You're listening to the Business Networking Show with Linda Cloke, John Turner and Jill Russell.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Business Network Show. It's Linda Cloke on today, and my guests today are Jackie Sansom.
Hello, Linda.
Hello, and also Ben Miller of Ben Miller Marketing.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
That's your welcome. So so today we're going to be, the reason I put on the bittersweet melody is because I thought it was really appropriate because life is very bittersweet, isn't it? I mean, you know, I feel mine's more sweet than bitter, but you know, that depends on, I suppose, your attitude to life.
It does.
So let me just give everybody a little introduction to Jackie. So after 27 years as a family and childcare lawyer, Jackie experienced firsthand the brutal cost of chronic pressure when burnout led to cancer diagnosis in 2016. The turning point reshaped her career and became the catalyst for her work as a burnout prevention and recovery coach, helping high-performing professionals and organisations rebuild health clarity and sustainable performance. Jackie combines lived experience with evidence-based tools to restore energy, protect relationships, and create success that doesn't come at the expense of well-being. I mean, you know, so many things that you've said in there, you know, because when you have burnout, who do you take it out on? The ones closest to you, don't you?
Absolutely.
It doesn't, and then it affects relationships.
Yep. It leaks into every area of life. It's, you know, finances, professional relationships, personal relationships, and of course your career and health.
Mm. So do you find that working with, when you go to bigger businesses, are you looking for the employees within that business who tend to have burnout? Because let's face it, self-employed people, I'm sure Ben will probably let you know because he's doing loads of things at the moment. You know, I mean, I've had everyone saying to me this week, slow down.
We do. Yeah, we do. We get so consumed with our to-do lists and, you know, everything else that we've got to do and all these things hitting us. And we live in environments where everything is hitting us all at once. It's so overstimulated. And we've got a nervous system that was initially created or evolved from, you know, Stone Age times. And our nervous system has not evolved in the at the same rate as our environment has. So you think, you know, we've got emails coming in, we've got the TV on all the time, we've got that, our natural biorhythms of day and night are disrupted because we've got light coming in, you know, when we should be naturally asleep.
Well, and your phone, actually. Sometimes I forget to turn my phone off, and when I don't turn it off, the light, even if I've turned off the sound, the light can wake me up. Can you turn the heater off?
Yeah.
The light does wake me up, and you don't even realise you're doing that, do you?
Absolutely. And that, you know, there's quite a lot now out there. It's not my thing at all, and I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that would be mortified by this. But you know, there's a lot of negative waves and ions that, you know, hit you when you're asleep. It's energy in the room. If you take your phone up to bed with you, and
that's why they say for children not to, don't they?
Yeah, it can be really disruptive to sleep and your natural energy system.
Mm. Well, when I remember, I actually plug mine in my office because then it's away from me. But then I do worry, and the children say to me, "What if we want to get hold of you? We're not going to be able to, because obviously I won't be able to hear it ringing."
Yeah,
especially because I have the fan in my bedroom on at night as well, so I won't hear a thing.
Yeah, but this is our society nowadays. I mean, you know, for those of us that are a little bit older and not spring chickens like Ben over there, our childhood was very, very, very different to, you know, what children live nowadays. We would have gone out of the house at sort of 9 a.m. and we wouldn't be back until lunchtime, and we didn't have all this tech, you know. I mean, my childhood really consisted of watching Why Don't You in the Morning during the holidays and then going out and doing whatever Why Don't You said you had to do, you know, and you went out and you ran riot around the local neighbourhood. But it wasn't, you know, there was no nastiness. All the neighbours looked out for you. It was just a completely different environment and community feel to what it is today.
It's funny, actually, because I grew up in London up until I was 9, and then I went to Maidstone, mm-hmm. and we've got Moat Park right on the doorstep.
Right.
And when I need to think of a happy place, my happy place is Moat Park.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? Someone said to me, walk down steps to your happy place, and I can see the sort of summer house there. I can see the great big lake in front of me, and I walk down towards it in my mind. And it really helps me.
It's getting in touch with nature. It's getting grounded. And if you can do that barefoot with your feet on the grass, you know, the energy that you absorb is amazing for you. It really does ground you.
Yeah,
very,
so many more dogs around now. Mind you, when I was a girl, I was walking through the cows.
When I was a girl, I was emptying the hen house and getting chased by the geese.
So. Oh, were you?
I'm with you there, Lisa.
Oh, dear. So tell me how you help people.
So I help people in a variety of ways. I've got a number of different qualifications because as a lawyer, I wanted to make sure that I did absolutely everything and I covered everything because my own experience with burnout was so devastating to me. So I wanted to know everything about everything. So I went and got trained in health coaching and I went and got trained in business coaching, executive business coaching.
Where did you go for this training?
So the health coaching I trained with something called Lifestyle Prescriptions, mm-hmm. and they look at the root cause of health issues and they take into account all the factors that we deal with. So our environment, the social element that we have, the people in it, our emotions, work, everything. We look at the whole lot, and then our perception of what that means for us, because our perception of what we're experiencing is so important. It's what makes us all unique, and you and I could witness the same thing and have two very different perceptions of that same event.
I speak to my children about that, and I speak to myself about it. I quite often speak to myself in the mirror, give myself a little telling off. But that's because, you know, the thing is, it doesn't matter what someone else is thinking, because 9 times out of 10, if you think you know what they're thinking, you're usually wrong.
Absolutely.
Aren't you? Because they're not thinking what you think they're thinking at all.
Absolutely. And that's the inner critic and the inner coach that I talk to, you know, when I'm training. I tell people and explain to them what that means. But really, in all honesty, that is informed by all of your experiences from the moment you were conceived. You hear everything when you're in the womb, you know, and right the way through. And what your brain does, your subconscious mind actually collates all of those memories. And if you liken it to like a filing cabinet, it collates all of the relatable experiences and puts them in one file. And then anytime you experience something that's very similar to that, it will go and open up that file and it will say, oh, look, we remember this. And this is what happened last time. And this is why our perception is so important. But all of that happens so quickly that we don't recognise that whole process going on.
Mm. I've been speaking to someone recently and she said we've got a bucket in the bottom of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the top of your brain is your happy place and the bottom of your brain is your unhappy place. You were talking about cortisol, I think, earlier, Ben.
Yeah.
Is that the good stuff or the bad stuff?
Yeah, so your amygdala is around the bottom of the brain, and that's the emotional centre. That's the bit that sends all the distress signals to other parts of your brain that process it. So when we experience something, we only ever experience it through our emotions and our senses. So we use our sight, taste, smell, hearing, touch. That's how we experience it. That goes straight into a specific part of our brain. That's the part that processes it. That then connects to your amygdala, because whilst it's processing it, it's looking for all that similar and relatable information. And then it goes to the amygdala that says, oh, hang on, we've got a problem here. The last time we experienced this, this was really bad. And that's why we get fearful, and that's why we get frightened of events, or, you know, you were talking about something just now, weren't you, about...
Your daughter had fallen off the bike.
Yes.
Yeah. First time she did that, it was almost the shock of it happening rather than pain that she was crying about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that experience will then inform what she does the next time she goes to get on that bike, she will, her brain will automatically remember. The subconscious mind, where that's held, actually processes 40 billion bits of information per second.
Do you know, it took me a long time to get back on a bike after falling off. Yeah. So I fell off when I was 5. How old was she?
Similar age, I think 6. Maybe
so I went down a hill in Ringleston. I was at my granddad's. I went down a hill and I came over the handlebars and went into some stinging nettles and fell in stinging nettles with my swimming costume on. Stupid. So I got covered in stinging nettles and I didn't ride a bike again until I was 40.
I've got so many questions about why you were riding a bike in a swimming costume there, Linda.
Oh, I was 5.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, you didn't care, do you? You don't care when you're younger.
You hold that viscerally in your body as well as in your brain because it's all connected up together. So when we look at how it works, when you talk to the energy in your body, and this is what I was saying to you earlier, when we've got the energy in our body, you know, for example, we're online now, you know that this is being broadcast to a number of people.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see that signal going along all the airwaves, but you know it's happening.
Mm.
And that's the way our energy works in our body. So I can sit in a room with you and if you're hacked off about something, I'm going to feel it when you're hacked off.
Yes, you can, can't you?
So, you know, we all pick up on each other's energy like that.
Well, you were saying to me about the body as well earlier, and I saw Ben Barnett last night, and Ben said to me, you need to come for me for a massage. I can feel the energy coming. Yeah. He could feel the tension. That's the word he used, coming off my body. And he, when he does the massages, it's to release that negative energy that's in your body.
Yeah, so he's working with the fascia, and the fascia is highly connected to trauma that's held in the body. And when we hold trauma in our body, it makes us all stiff and, you know, it's quite horrific. So
I should be walking like a robot at the moment. Then.
you can feel it, like when you're going to present and we have some training, the guy said, drop your shoulders and then do it again.
Yeah.
To get that attention out, because we're carrying around far more than we think we are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing how it all interconnects and how, you know, you have a tough day in the office, you come out with a headache because your shoulders are up around your ears all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, many, many years of that actually has a really adverse effect on your body. And that's the part that I deal with as well. So aligned with what Ben does there. But, you know, even for me, I've had a recent experience where I was holding a lot of stress and tension in my body about last summer. And a friend of mine is an osteopath and she came around, treated me and she said, relax. I said, I am relaxing. She said, no, relax. And I said, I am. And she literally pushed my shoulders down, like you say. And I said, oh, I didn't realise that I was holding that. And because it's become so normal for me to be in that place and to hold it. Since then, it's been a real revelation to me about how, you know, how my shoulders don't ache so much. Mm. And yet this is my thing.
And this, you know, alternative therapies like osteopaths, like Ben, like what you're doing, it's amazing how much all of that really helps people. And, you know, maybe the NHS don't understand it in the same way. They're getting to, aren't they?
Yeah, they're starting to get on board with it now.
The trouble is, you don't pay them. Ben doesn't pay them. It's the drug people that pay them.
Absolutely.
The drug barons.
I was going to say something about
that. Yeah, pharma do, and they have, you know, a lot. For example, Bessel van der Kolk, he wrote a book called The Body Keeps a Score, and he explains.
I'm reading that, yeah.
It's an amazing book, honestly. I'd highly recommend it. Mm. It's not an easy read.
No, I know.
There's quite a lot, because he's quite an eminent psychiatrist, and he's been working, I think, since the 1970s with former vets, serious child abuse cases, you know, people with significant mental health problems where they've had health problems related to it. And when he was doing his book, he explains, I mean, if you're reading it, you'll know, he explains how our body holds on to that. But for many years, he actually promoted PTSD. He recognised PTSD way before PTSD was a thing. And he approached the DSM. Do you know what the DSM
no.
is? It's a diagnostic statistical manual of mental health conditions. So it's like a Bible that all practitioners, GPs, medics, you know, they all relate to it. And there's like a tick box on there of what you need to, you know, the conditions and the symptoms that you need to be have a diagnosis of a specific condition. And pharma absolutely, for the first three editions of the DSM, refused to acknowledge PTSD because it couldn't be treated with any medication.
Mm.
It needs that releasing, that trauma that we're holding in our body that needs to be released with the deeper work, like I do EFT, matrix re-imprinting, hypnotherapy, where we're working with the subconscious mind that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Or EMDR is another one that's recognised.
What's that?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that, Linda, and it's...
Okay.
Don't ask me what EMDR is. I don't know. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's very similar to EFT. EFT is the emotional freedom technique, or also known as tapping.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that is amazing. You know, I had some amazing results with that when I did my training in 2016.
Do you find some people react to things in a different way? Because I took my grandson for tapping and it didn't actually seem to make that much difference. Is that because he's young?
No, not at all. It will have made a difference, but it's how the practitioner worked with him to bring it into his consciousness about how it changed. So the way that I was trained to do it is we check in with giving feelings. We always start off with the emotion, and we get people right up to the top of distress with it, because that's when they can recognise, oh God, this is really bad for me. They attribute colours to it. You know, I was saying to you just now about when we experience something, we experience it through our senses.
Mm-hmm.
So colours, sight, textures, smells, what we heard, things like that. You attribute all of that. You ask them, is there this, is there that? Because that will trigger all the memories that are stored in the subconscious mind. When you get to that place and they actually recognise that, you can then tap. And as you tap around and you use specific phrases as you're going around it, the colours change, the textures change, you know, the smells might change. And that's how you recognise that things are changing, that the emotion and the energy around it, that's energy healing, the emotion and the energy is actually changing. So it's moving throughout your body. It becomes very visceral. But also when you name the emotions and you start to acknowledge what the emotions really are, you start to take back control, because your prefrontal cortex comes back online and starts to make sense of things and starts to understand things.
Yes.
Much of our perception is formed before the age of eight because of social cultural conditioning. You think before the age of eight, everything that we're exposed to, all of our firsts, you know, riding a bike, going to school, making our first friends, having our first falling out, Johnny and the snotty-nosed kid in the playground who kicked you, you know, all these things, they inform everything that goes on for you, and it creates what I call a blueprint that then you carry with you until you get older. But when you're pre-eight, you're a hot mess of emotions because your prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed. So whilst it's online and you can make sense of stuff, the prefrontal cortex actually is the part that rationalises your thinking and rationalises what's happening for you. So when that's not on board and you're a hot mess of emotions, you're overwhelmed, and that's imprinting itself and you're holding it in your body.
Mm.
And it's that visceral, that emotional, that mental and psychological aspect that you carry with you as your blueprint. And that's what informs when you, I don't know, when you see somebody else falling off their bike.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because do you get any aches and pains at your age, Ben?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Yep. I've got an ache.
Shoulders are the...
It's the shoulders is your main one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I've got a pain in my, just below my elbow. I've got no clue what it is. It's been there for months. I felt it then because I spoke about it. But I don't know what it is. And that does make you wonder what on earth I'm holding in that part of my body.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a weird place, isn't it?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, my own experience, I nearly lost my daughter in 2005 to meningococcal septicemia.
Mm-hmm.
3 o'clock in the morning, the 3rd of December, I was told she's not going to survive the night.
Mm-hmm.
I was a single parent at the time. She was my only child. I had the most epic period of disassociation. which means it was too big for me emotionally, that I came away from myself, and I functioned like that for 3 weeks while she was on life support. That was a huge journey for me, because not only during those 3 weeks that I was sat beside her bed, did I witness lots of medical procedures that I should never have been witnessing, you know, things and nurses and doctors talking about whether or not she was going to live. Physiotherapists come around and massaging her muscles, you know, to keep her flexible. But during that time, bear in mind my personality. In my friendship group, in my professional career, I am the person that everybody comes to for answers. The most important person in my life, the one that I love the most, was led there on a bed, and I didn't have the skill set, knowledge or capacity to actually help her.
I can't imagine, because I've never been in that situation, but I the thing is, you want to fix it. Man, you want to fix things. I'm a fixer.
Yep.
And so to not be able to fix something like that is like...
Well, it was huge.
It was absolutely
huge. And that period of 3 weeks, like I said, many, many traumas, mini traumas over that period of 3 weeks. Mm. Later on, as soon as she... I'm pleased to say she did get better.
Yeah, yeah.
She's fine, and she's a strapping lass now with 4 children of her own and working in the NHS. But...
How ironic is that?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. But with her, what happened with me, as soon as I knew she was all right, my body went into a bit of a meltdown then.
Mm.
And within a week of her coming out of hospital, I'm driving and I start to experience a pain right in the centre of my arm, my left palm. Within 6 months, the use of my left arm has really reduced. Between 2005 and 2012, I went through the NHS pathway. I had physio, acupuncture, you name it, painkillers. I did the whole lot. None of it worked. 2012, I ended up having rotator cuff surgery for frozen shoulder. And I remember the frozen shoulder bit. I ended up having that. Still didn't resolve it. By the time I had the surgery, I couldn't lift my arm up. My arm was really stuck. The surgery released it a little bit, but for the next 4 years, I was still having what they call trapezia trigger point injections, which is steroids being injected all along my trapezia joints because I was still in so much pain. I had my last trapezia trigger point injection 2 weeks before I went and trained to do my EFT training as a practitioner. And my mindset when... when I went to this training was, I'm going to help everybody else because that's what I do. I'm a lawyer, right? I can sort everybody else out. I still hadn't sussed this one out despite my own experiences. So I go into the training, and at the time, the guy that was training us played the track from Pink, Perfect. And I started crying watching it in the room. And, you know, his tissues come down and I'm all snotty and tears. And the next day we were supposed to bring something to work on with the other practitioners. And I ended up working with one of the helpers there, which was really great. And she said to me, have you brought something to work on today? And I said, I haven't really got anything. Life's pretty damn perfect. You know, I've got a good job, lovely daughter, lovely house, car, you know, all the material things, all the superficial stuff. I said, it's all great. She said, okay. She said, but weren't you crying yesterday? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, what was that about? And I said, oh, that was just my daughter. I said, she nearly died, but she's all right now. Because what our brain does is our brain makes sense of it and intellectualises trauma to stop us actually acknowledging that it's locked in our body. So she went, quite big then. And I went, well, yeah, but she's fine. And she said, no, it's a big trauma. She said, just for fun, should we work on that one? I went, yeah, okay. 30 minutes later, we're sat there and I've worked through all these different mini traumas that I said to you I'd experienced over that 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, my shoulder went.
That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Good. Yeah. That was a good.
I can't do that.
Patsy came and said, peace, go pop, wasn't it? But yeah, my shoulder went pop. Within a couple of weeks, I had got full use of my arm back and it's fine. Now, that was, I said, frozen shoulder. That was a trauma that was frozen in time, trapped in my shoulder.
And sometimes you don't even know you've got it, do you? I went to see Tracy King, another one of our members from Maidstone, and she got me to hold up both of my arms. Mm. She said, right, raise them both above your head. I couldn't raise my right arm. And I'm like, I'm going, well, that's a bit weird. How come I can't raise it? And I had no clue why. I still don't know to this day why I couldn't do it. But anyway, whatever she did, I could suddenly raise it above. And it was very strange. Yeah. Literally, I'm going, hang on a minute, what's going on? I wonder if she had a bit of hypnotherapy and was holding it down. Yeah, it was very strange.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's so much out there now that the NHS... Unfortunately, they might offer some of these services, but they've got, you know, they're on their knees, the NHS. They haven't got the capacity anymore to see people. They're so overwhelmed. And because they've adopted this approach in the NHS for many years now of just treating the symptoms and not prevention, we've now got waiting lists. And, you know, it's really hard to get into it.
I mean, we could get into a whole nother discussion about that, couldn't we? Because, you know, it's I won't go into discussion.
Yeah.
With something you touched on with the book you were saying about, you spoke about pets as well. So pets hold trauma in their body as well, which I think.
Yeah, they do. I mean, pets are a lot more basic than us because they don't have the same level of stimulation and they don't absorb it like we do. I mean, they have the same level, but they don't take notice of it like we do. They're very basic, you know. Think caveman.
Mm-hmm.
Think animal, their nervous systems are quite aligned. So what will happen with a pet, like for example, my dog, if she gets stressed about something, she'll have a good shake. And, you know, she shakes it out and she's like, oh, yeah, that's great.
I have to try that one.
No, we do. Yeah, you do. You do. It's changing the state of the mind, but it's also sending a message to your body that, you know, everything's okay. It's the energy levels. And if you get up and, you know, if you feel stressed, get up, have a shake. You know, put a bit of music on, literally dance around, and it changes the whole mindset and your body. You only need to do it for a second.
The thing on music has been a thing that's occurred to me recently is since I started listening to more podcasts and less music. So I used to walk everywhere and listen to music, and then I started to listen to more and more podcasts, and I had to get through the podcasts. And I think that's definitely related to my mood not being as good. So now if I'm feeling down, I put music on, and it really does lift it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just a thought that occurred to me quite recently, which is why I brought it up and it seems to align. But yeah, music really, not for everyone, but certainly for me and I imagine others, it
does
really
for
helps.
Most people.
What sort of podcast are you listening to then?
Oh, well.
Business?
Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of football ones.
Mm-hmm.
My team wasn't doing very well at the time, so perhaps that was something to do with it. Star Wars ones, golf ones, marketing ones, obviously. So a variety,
Star
but
Wars
my brain's not wandering or thinking, following its own path. It's kind of just listening to what they're saying the whole time and not having that freak. But with music, you can go for a walk and you're thinking of all kinds of things. But with the podcast, you're constantly focused on what they're saying. Okay, your mind wanders occasionally if it's not a very good podcast.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that's...
That's interesting.
And that's the thing. I mean, we tend to know, we don't... value that quiet time, that, you know, that downtime. We feel like we've got to fill our time with either TV, music, podcasts. We've got to be doing something all the time. And that's where our nervous system gets so overstimulated, bringing us right back round to, you know, that initial biorhythm talk.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, my wife's one that says she's not very good at relaxing would be her thing because there's always something to do.
Yeah.
And you can sit on your sofa and do your bank accounts and everything on your phone now. That's the trouble because you've always got it with you. There's always something you could be doing.
You've got to make a conscious effort, Ben, haven't you?
Yeah,
I'm better at that. My notifications are all off on my phone except for some WhatsApps. Like if I'm in a WhatsApp group, that's generally off unless someone app mentions me and then it's important. And all my socials, they're all off so I can go and check it. Oh, got 10 minutes to check it. I'll go and check it when I'm ready rather than checking in 20, 30 times a day because there's a little red icon because I can't leave red icons as part of it. I know some people, home screens full of these red dots. How do you do that? That's stressful. But yeah, I'm probably a little bit better at that. But then I get distracted. You're going to do one thing on your phone, you see something else, and the next thing you know, I forgot what I've come here to do in the first place.
And that's the stress and the overstimulation.
So you have to, and you know, read quite a bit, but even that's on a Kindle because I don't then need the light on to read at night. But there's no other distractions. But yeah, finding time to listen to music, read, helps me be better when I'm working.
So you just said about football. Do you get out and play football? Do you get out and do exercise?
Not anymore. I just gave up five-a-side.
See, that's really great ago, for keeping, not just for keeping the body in shape, but for relieving stress because it's physical movement.
I do a lot of swimming and walking now, really, and golf, although that's how energetic that is up for debate, but it's a five-mile walk with carrying some heavy clubs around. But yeah, the football, I was just hurting too much the day after. And then I recover for the week and then I play again and then I'll just draw a line under that. But yeah, definitely walking and swimming and...
Well, that
you get that rush of endorphins after.
Yeah,
doing that,
exactly, and that comes down to the fascia that I was telling you about. You know, where our fascia gets stiff because we're not. It's stress. It's how the cortisol and adrenaline floods into our system, how we hold ourselves with our energy, all of that. That's why you're aching now, like you never ached when you were 20.
Is that just age, bounce? Partly?
I mean,
I do notice the more exercise I do and the more stretches I do and. You know, I go to an osteo and he'll fix something and then I do the exercise and then I slowly don't do the exercises and then it gets worse and then I go and see him again and I'm sure he knows this, but, you know, doing the exercise and doing the right stretches and swimming is great because it's not impacting. It definitely stretches out the whole body and get your heart rate going and it's good for that. So I can see the angle, but I still think part of it's just age, isn't it? The wear and tear on your body.
It is, but...
Well, we just taught that.
A lot of it is conditioning of our mind. I mean, I've got a friend who's, I think her dad's nearly 80, and he is blooming amazing. He has been doing yoga since she was a child, and she's 50-something now. And he is absolutely amazing. He sort of bobs along, you know, he's so flexible, he's muscly, he's small, he's wiry. And he can get himself into positions that I couldn't even get myself into in my 20s, you know. And yeah, it is. A lot of it is mind conditioning because if you believe something, Ben, it will be.
Yeah, believe it. And it's true. Do you, is this part of, because you spoke about NLP, is that a part of what you do?
Yeah. So we look at beliefs. That's, the NLP, the EFT, all of it is based in beliefs. And that's part of the social conditioning. Mm. So if you think money... When you were younger, your mum and dad had an opinion about what money meant to them, and you will have inherited those opinions.
My mum thought I was going to marry Prince Charles.
This wasn't the other prince. I'm not sure about that, the better.
Yes. I'm with Ben on this one. I think you had a lucky escape.
Yeah, I'm sure I did. but yeah, it's surprising, isn't it, how you know, NLP can help and preconditioned thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, another thing my mum used to say was money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what sort of message is that for you as a child? You know, you know there's a scarcity mindset there and you're like, oh God, you know, what am I going to do? So what we do is we then claw money in and try and keep it. And the more we try and keep it, our abundant mindset just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy, really.
So how do we get rid of what the body holds on to, finally? How do we get rid of what the body holds on to?
Well, there's a number of ways that you can do it. You could go to osteopaths, you could go to somebody like Ben, you could come to somebody like me, you can do it with nutritional therapy.
Nutritional therapy, so what you eat?
Yeah, you're cleaning your diet up. You clean your diet up and you don't eat the processed foods.
Have I got to throw away the bar of chocolate I've got in my bag?
Yeah. It's not Galaxy, so yes. I'm sorry, Linda. But I know you can still have treats, but, you know, the more processed stuff we put in, the more our body struggles to break it down. So you've got to adopt a holistic approach. You deal with the mind. You deal with the body and you deal with the psychological, the emotional aspect of it and the visceral aspect of it.
So what's the, do you think there's a benefit in using all three? So say someone was to come to you, go to Ben.
Definitely.
You know, they'd sort of be cured quicker.
Yeah, definitely. Each therapy, I mean, you could come to me and I could help you clear the mind and the emotions and the beliefs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've still got physical pain going on in your body... Mm-hmm. I mean, I still get trouble with my shoulder, not because the trauma is still trapped in there, but because I've had so many years where I've held that in there that when I'm having a bad day, I do tense it back up. So somebody like Ben, perfect for that, you know. Ben also comes at it, I know I've spoken with Ben, but he also comes at it from, you know, a deep visceral sort of point of view. Mm. Ben and I are also Reiki masters, so we look at things from a spiritual perspective.
Yeah, so
as well.
Tracy is as well. Right, yeah. Not as much as you and Ben, I don't think. Do you have massages in that? Or is it just the osteopath?
Used to, but it's just osteo seemed to actually cure the problem I was having, lower back. Groin, it was all twisted and he'd crunch, crunch, crunch. And I'd be like, wow, yeah. That is incredible. But I used to have massages and they just, deep tissue, but they just felt nice. I don't think they cured anything for me.
Yeah. Well, Ben, surprised me about him, because normally when you have a massage, people don't speak to you. He was speaking to me the whole time.
Mm.
And some of the things he was saying were quite spooky, because I was thinking to myself, how does he know that? How does he know that?
That's the spiritual.
As he's massaging me, and I'm like, whoa.
That's the
I got a tattoo I didn't know about.
I know. Yeah, it was quite spooky because he was telling me lots of things that my body was holding on to that I would have thought I'd forgotten about ages ago.
Yeah.
So that was really surprising. So with Tracy, it was my movement. And with Ben, it was definitely what I'm holding in my body.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where Ben will have connected with you energetically.
Mm.
And whilst he's got his hands on your body, actually working on your body, he can feel things. You know, spiritually he can feel things.
Well, he felt it yesterday and he didn't even touch me.
Yeah.
Don't let him touch you, Ben.
Well, if it helps with pain, I'd be all up for it.
Yeah, well, he definitely does. Yeah.
I mean, I think, personally, the best I feel all year is dry January.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And I used to poo-poo it for years. I ruined the worst day of the year anyway.
Yeah.
Worst month of the year, sorry. But yeah, that's because I then have more energy, so I do more exercise, and then I eat better because I'm not craving carbs all the time.
Yep.
And that's definitely the best I feel, because it's a combination of the healthier eating, less alcohol, and get adverts for mushroom gummies and pillows that's going to cure my. But I know that that's not going to do it. It's going to be
sugar overload in your brain. That's what the alcohol does. It, you know, in your brain and in your body.
Yeah.
And it makes you just crave more and more, like you've just said. You know. You want some carbs, so you want a packet of crisps or some peanuts, or, you know, you want something else whilst you're doing it. But it's also a good, really good way of quieting your mind and numbing yourself out. That's why people drink.
Yeah.
Because if they drink, they don't, you know, their confidence, they've suddenly got this huge surge of confidence, so they feel a lot better, but they stop thinking about all the things that are bothering them.
Does chocolate do the same?
There is a theory around magnesium with chocolate. So yes, if you're craving chocolate, you've got a deficit in magnesium, and magnesium is brilliant for the brain and your mental health and sleep patterns, Linda.
So I can eat it.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I heard as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to do some shout outs and then we go back to Jackie. So Hayley Hickmont-Morris, who has done the copywriting for our website, actually, has said, if it's not too late, then I'd love a shout out. Get found easily online, earn trust and convert without selling your soul to hard sales tactics, consistent blogs, newsletters and website content. Chat to Hayley, copywriter at Head and Heart Messaging, writing with strategy and soul for your business or enterprise. Now, she's done an absolutely amazing job for us. We had a long interview with her. And she completely understood our whole ethos from Synergy Networking Events, which was really great. She understood how we're different, and it's all come across in the writing that she's done for us, which has been amazing. Ian Wade has said, yes, covering you from head to toe.
In his mankini.
I know, in his mankini. Well, he actually did. I'm wearing my uniform today because I'm straight off to Whitstable tonight, and he actually did all of the branding and all of the clothing that we wear at Synergy. So that's absolutely fantastic. We've got several people who actually provide branded workwear. We've got Evolution branded clothing, and we've got Just So clothing as well. And we've got Lorraine from Style Branding, and we've also got Mike Humphrey-Smith as well. So we've got quite a few people offering branding in Synergy. And then Sheila Winter has said, yes, please, 97% of UK households are currently paying too much for their essential home services. The problems are they are confused when researching online. They don't feel they don't have the time to spend time trying to find a solution. They worry about making the wrong decision. Sheila has the solution for everybody. They do all the work. Put in all your services on one simple bill. We give you a guarantee for qualifying households of savings, and we will pay double the difference back. We also pay you up to £150 free money just for agreeing to save money. Sounds good. Alison Whelan, she said, yes, please. Tired of wasting hours searching for your perfect holiday, only to end up confused and frustrated? Bags of Pack Travel by Inspire provide a free and 100% personalised service to take the time, stress and confusion out of booking holidays. Phone or WhatsApp Alison on 0772 628 6903. I hope I've read that correctly, because, yeah, I need to. Ben Barnett has just given us a thumbs up, but we've given him lots of coverage, so I'm sure everyone knows what he does anyway. So that's really good. So what I'd like to ask, if somebody is interested in coming to you for any of the services you offer as a burnout coach, what's the best way to get hold of you, Jackie?
Best way is to book a clarity call with me, or to just contact me on my mobile, which is, do you want me to give that?
Yes, please.
07737278158. Or they can go to my website and have a look at me on there, and yeah, send me an email.
And what's your website, Jackie?
It's jackiesansom.com.
Brilliant. Nice and simple.
Yeah, very, very simple. Or they can email me on jackie@jackiesansom.com. That's really simple.
Fantastic. Okay, so now I'd like to talk about a little bit about Valentine's and networking. Do you think they go hand in hand?
Yes.
Do you think they go hand in hand?
I think no. No.
We've got a panel going on here with others.
Excellent. So the reason, actually, it's a bit of an unfair advantage we have over Ben, because what we were saying earlier is how a lot of people, since I've been starting this business, I ran a dating agency for 19 years, and a lot of people have said to me about how it's very similar to dating, going networking, because it's about building relationships, not expecting it. Who was it shared a post this morning? I think there was someone shared a post on LinkedIn this morning. I think it was Lucy. And she said, Lucy Jesse, that is, of Crescent Turner Digital. She basically was saying that the people who go up to her with a business card and say, here you are, and then they basically run off once they've given you the business card.
Yeah.
And she's like, or they'll say to her, what do you do? And she can tell they're biting at the bit to say, tell what they do.
They're not listening.
Yep. And not listening. So she actually did a post about it this morning. It was really interesting, the number of people that have people just come up to them and just sell to them. I didn't think that happened in networking anymore. Does there need to be more education around? Do you get much of it, Ben?
Well, yes, sometimes that does still happen. It's like when you're doing an event or an exhibition, people will just shamelessly come and sell to you on your stand.
Wow.
But your networking structure doesn't really, well, if people are doing that, they only get 3 minutes to do it. So at least you know you're going to get a chance to speak as well. But it's a bit like in marketing, when you just go and people are always trying to sell to clients without building that trust first, or showing they understand them first, and they're never going to buy. So I think it sits across, here selling marketing, the irony, but it does sit across, networking, dating, and how you present to the wider client audience you're trying to target as well.
It's that trust, isn't it, in marketing?
Yeah,
and that's, you know, from my perspective, you've got to nurture those relationships. You know, if I just came up to you now and wasn't interested in what you were saying, and like Lucy said this morning, you know, you're not actually listening.
Yeah.
You're not communicating properly. Then that energy level isn't going to be there. But if you and I got to know each other now over, I don't know, two or three months, or, you know, over a year, and we're meeting at the same, you know, we're coming across each other in the same networking circles, our relationship is going to deepen, and you're going to know what I do for a living. And, you know, you might have a friend who needs some of my services, and that's where the nurturing of relationships really does align with being in a relationship with somebody in a dating sense.
It does, and yeah. I think that's where radio helps, because what it's doing is it's helping other members to get to know about your business, to think about whether they know someone that can use your services. And you never know who's listening, especially with it being on the website and that now. You know, we point people to it in all of our emails, done by Hayley, I might add. She actually did our emails, and in there she says, you know, you can listen to any of our radio shows on there. So they're all put on the website, and it's really easy. But I've had people say to me, you know, you wouldn't go up and just walk up to, mind you, I do know some people who have just walked up to it. I had someone do a presentation in Kings Hill, William English, and he said, he saw his wife in the airport and she was the most beautiful woman he saw, and he knew he was going to marry her. So you do hear stories like that, don't you?
Yep.
There's just something there. You know that they're your soulmate, which is amazing.
But even if he knew that, he still had to nurture that relationship.
He still had to nurture it, yeah, otherwise she wouldn't have.
And approach in the right way.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, had he have just gone up and said, I'm going to marry you, there might have been a bit of problem. She might have whipped off to court and got an injunction. But
yeah, exactly.
That's a whole different story.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I do find some of the events we've got on this week. So we've got our Whitstable event tonight in the Crescent Turner Hotel. Beautiful place for a Valentine's, by the way, if you want to take your lovely wife down to the seaside. It's absolutely stunning, isn't it, Jackie?
It is. It's gorgeous, yeah.
I mean, the hotel has got views right across the bay, and they've got a teepee in the back garden, and the veranda, to sit on the veranda. I used to sit out there with my mum and we'd sit out there and have a glass of wine, and it was just really lovely and peaceful, you know, watching, you're not even watching the world go by, you're just looking at the view.
Yeah, I feel like we need to qualify the teepee, because the teepee is, it's amazing. It is
amazing.
It's not just a little teepee, it's a huge, great big event, and it's very warm in the winter and gorgeous in the summer, a bit of shade in the summer.
And we did our Christmas party there, which was fabulous. So yeah, absolutely wonderful. Tomorrow, Dartford College have got, are you presenting?
Yeah.
What time has she asked you to go there? It's between 10 and
10 and 2. 10 and there. 2. So I think she's lined a few of us up, and we're going to, it's a business talk to the students there, just to sort of give them an insight into what it's like to be in practice in any area. So I sort of straddled a couple of their areas.
That's great. So I wanted to go, but I've got a 4-hour appointment with Julian McLeish tomorrow, because we're going for the ISO 9001. So I thought I'd better do a bit of prep before we go there. and then the wonderful Moat Park, we're there doing a walk on Friday. That starts at 10:30. And Bethany launches Canterbury at 10:30 on Saturday morning at the Granville Pub. So that's a new venue, so that's going to be amazing.
Is that Saturday morning, is it?
No, Tuesday morning. Did I say Saturday?
You did.
I'll tell you what, I'm really worrying about myself. I called Colette, I think I called her Lindsay yesterday. I called Chris Colin or something bizarre, Chris Henry. I was calling everyone by different names.
I was there when you did that with Chris.
I thought, thank God I'm single. I wonder what I'd be calling my husband if I was married. He probably divorced me. Anyway, so the IOD, Institute of Directors, have got an event at 8:30 on Thursday morning, the 19th. If you're going along to that, tickets are £20 and definitely a good one to go to. It's being held in the Ashford International Hotel. As it's the Institute of Directors, quite big businesses go there. So definitely worth a shout out, definitely worth getting yourself along to that. And they don't hold regular events, the IOD. So it'll be a good one, because everyone's sort of been waiting for it. So that'll be good. I know that also the FSB have got an event on. Jane Martin did invite me. I think it might be Thursday in Valerie's in Ashford. So look on the FSB website. There's definitely an event going, I believe, this week. But because we've got five of our own events, I did say to Jane, I just can't attend. And then also next week on the 19th, Beth Turner is the speaker at Bryson's event, which is a free event at Gallagher's football stadium in Maidstone. Now, it's always worth taking advantage of these free events, because you know, Bryson's is an accountancy company, and you do find there are a lot of legal companies. I know Whitehead Monckton, Thackeray Williams, they all do free networking events. So it's always worth looking. I think probably Thackeray Williams are the people in your area, Ben.
Yeah.
So it's always worth looking and seeing what they do. And I know Whitehead, Monkton, probably Canterbury area.
Mm, I used to work at Thackeray Williams when it was many years ago.
Yes, yeah, you said. So you spoke to Katrina, didn't you, at King's Hill?
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely
Brilliant
lady.
Brilliant firm they are. They're really, really lovely.
Yeah, they are amazing. I'm thrilled that they're members. Yeah. I was so chuffed with them. So Bryson's going to be an amazing event. Beth Turner is just a fantastic speaker. So that's going to be amazing. Then we've got our morning event on the 24th, which is always the last Tuesday of every month. And on the 25th, it's another free event, which is going to be at the Metro Bank in Ashford. Now, I know that Hazel Hall does free events. She did the Maidstone event yesterday. And I believe that she's doing the February event in Tunbridge Wells on the 18th. Or could be the 19th.
I'm not sure.
I'd check out with Hazel to see when the Metro Bank Tunbridge Wells event is on.
That's normally the last Thursday of each month, I believe.
Yes. Oh, so it could be the last Thursday.
Yeah, if it's that one, yep.
And then we actually have got a new venue, which I'm really excited to let everyone know, because it's called Roe Hill Grange Hotel and Spa. So it's basically, it's a bit of a weird one because its entrance is based in the BR postcode area and the building is in the DA postcode area.
Must be posh.
I know, it is. So, and it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's so lovely. And they're giving all of our members a 20% discount off the spa. So another amazing Valentine gift for all of our listeners. Well, not all of our listeners, because it's only if you're a member. You get the 20% discount. So just contact me if you want that. But Roe Hill Grange, we're there on the Thursday, the 26th of February, for our Dartford event. It's going to be absolutely amazing. The food there is stunning. Arshu, the business development manager there, she treated me to lunch and it was delicious. So, yeah, please do, you know, come along to one of those events. So really fab. Obviously, it's not all about synergy. There are lots of other events as well. You've got the Hive hold networking events, ABC hold networking events, and that's at Edenwood Place. So and there's lots of other different ones as well. BNR every day of the week, if you fancy a bit of that. So, yes, some really good stuff going on. So, Ben, we're going to have the break before we go to you, but tell me what you like about networking or don't like, because you really are looking for sort of bigger businesses, aren't you? So,
yeah, I mean, networking in general, I kind of poo-pooed it for years, but came to my first event. I think it was one of yours in Kings Hill, mm-hmm. About 6-7 months ago, and just wasn't what I expected it to be at all. So actually, as a thing, an activity, I'd heard of certain ones that are far more demanding of you, shall we say. Mm-hmm. But the way Synergy structured it and some other ones that I've been to, it's far more relaxed. It's not, here's my business card, I'm going to tell you about what I do for 10 minutes and you're trying to look for an exit. You know, it's structured enough, but relaxed at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, my approach to networking, my mind has been changed about networking and the value it brings to confidence. Not necessarily, you know, you're saying I need bigger businesses as my target audience, and that's true. But in terms of confidence and learning to present myself in those environments, it's helped no end. Mm.
And that's the thing, I think, that some people don't understand. It's so much more than just getting referrals, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And there's people in those networks that I will use for kind of the technical side of marketing, so SEO or video production. Mm. So it's definitely, and there might be businesses that rear their heads as a result of that network. But I don't treat it now as going expecting business straight away. But, you know, I have a finite amount of time and resource to allocate to networking. Mm. I think if you're looking for bigger businesses, I generally would suggest evening ones probably aren't where they're going to be. Mm-hmm. From having worked at corporate side, if my boss said to me, go to a networking thing this evening, that's not my work time. Yeah. If it was 9 to 11 at a hotel in London and I could do it on work time, I'd be there at
I think that's why our Kings Hill one is going so well.
Yeah.
You know, we've hit the ground running with that one. I mean, we had 30 people there last Thursday. Yeah.
And it you know, it sounds like a, I don't know what the right term is, but a pathetic reason to do daytime ones and not evening ones. But I think there's generally, if you're right, I'm working 9 to 5, I don't want to do the evening as well. If it's not your own business, you don't have the drive, you know, that you do when it is your own business. So for me, looking for businesses of 20 to 25 people, not necessarily a founder, I'm probably more like to meet the relevant connections at those kind of events.
Do you find, though, that when you do go to the events that are in the daytime, because I've been networking for a long time, I think you have as well, Jackie. And quite often you find with the bigger events is that it's not the decision maker that's there. It's the business development manager is there. So the business development manager can make, a good degree and definitely can impress upon the owner or the founder why it's good to be doing certain things. But at the end of the day, you don't have the opportunity to build the relationship with the owner or founder of the business. You're building a relationship with the business development manager.
Well, that's probably why it's a bit like marketing is you need to speak to the influencers and the decision maker and, especially in B2B software companies where my experience and my target audience are, they'll have a decision makers. The board could be 6-13 people have got to make a decision. So if you need to meet and appeal to as many people on that board of decision makers as you can. So networking in the evenings and daytime and being proactive on LinkedIn where I'm getting a bit more traction and making sure I've got a good presence there and I'm not selling all the time. I'm just sharing insight and expertise
giving
and experience
value,
there.
Isn't it? Value.
And giving value, yeah. Building trust.
I love what you've called business development managers as influencers. I think that's a much better name, don't you?
Yeah. And I mean, you said just now about Katrina. Is it
Katrina? Yeah.
So she will go back and she will report to about 5 or 6 other partners.
Yeah.
Because they will be there earning the money in the business of Thackeray Williams. And employing her to do that networking and relationship building and to help them make the decisions.
And Arshu as well at the Roe Hill Grange, she had to go back and report to a board about us doing the events there. Yeah. It wasn't just a decision, we'll have them. She had to go back and report to a board. So I love the word influencers better than business development manager. Development manager sounds like a hunter. Influencer sounds more...
Well, they'll influence the decision that the board makes, or they'll influence who gets put in front of the board.
Yes.
They might be that first barrier you've got to get through. I'm not going to recommend that person. They just came and gave me the business card and talked about themselves for 20 minutes. But I will recommend this person who understood what we're trying to achieve and just gave me some free advice and then wandered off and had to go and chase them for their card or whatever. I do that more because I'm a bit useless at forcing my business card and forgetting. It's not a tactic, but... But that will last longer.
You become memorable as well, don't you, Ben? When you're like the synergy, the way that you've got it set up is it does promote those relationships that, where you can go in to connect with a person, build that relationship, and meet that person. There's that eye contact, it's the touch, it's the conversation. And that's what people take away with them in a 60-second pitch. You can't capture that as well.
And especially when you're offering service like you, Jackie, where it's quite a personal, people are opening up to you and very, vulnerable probably in those and other therapies. So you're not going to do that off the back of a 60 second. You might buy a CD off a man in a pub if that, I don't doubt they still even do that, but back in the day, because it's a £2 risk and it's, I like that movie, go on then. It's very different to offering more in-depth services where you need to understand the business or the client and that comes over time and it's persistency and transparency and honesty.
And consistency. Yeah. So one of the things that Simon Rosemeyer of NextGen Cyber, he came in and I specifically wanted him to come in to meet Paul, who is the owner of Bitter, which is another networking event. So I said to Simon, right, I'm going to take you there because Paul is in the construction centre. So have you heard of Bitter Networking?
What does it stand for?
BITA. I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
BITA. You got any idea?
No.
Paul, if you're listening, you probably aren't, but let us know what it means. So he sort of met the two people in the room. So we had Charlie Lays in the room because I was quite keen for Bitter to go down to the Riverside Church and do an event. And Simon, I wanted Simon to meet him as well. So Simon's actually joined and he went over to Ireland just to go to a Bitter breakfast.
All right.
He got a referral there, which is huge.
I saw Simon on Friday actually at Thomas Wells networking event, and he told me about that then.
A spark, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, because he was saying, because both of you think sort of the same way and everything in regards to that, and that's absolutely great. But he was saying that, you know, he was so thrilled with me referring him to another networking group. Because the thing is, you've all got to have the one that's right for you.
Yep.
I'd love to hold on to you all and stop you running away. But, you know, that's not my way. I want what I want as a networking group is to make sure that all my clients get maximum amount from Synergy, and whether that's introducing you to another networking group or guiding you away from one.
Yeah,
and people will remember that and then they might come back.
Yeah, exactly.
I've tried all the others. Actually, yours was the best. And okay, none of them are right for what I do. But in terms of having that social engagement and that confidence, you know, if you're working on your own, just getting out and talking to other people is a godsend.
Exactly.
And if you do that to random people, it's a bit weird. So if you go into a networking group where you know people and you can you say share similar challenges and experiences, so there's still value there.
Mm. Did you find that with Metrobank? But walking into that, did you find that you knew more people?
There was half from Spark and half from Synergy.
Oh, was
and then
it really?
Oh, sorry, half and then there's a third from Synergy, a third from Spark, and a third I'd not seen before.
Oh.
There was someone my wife knew who she's trying to introduce me to from her business. So it was kind of a...
Oh, you didn't introduce me to your wife?
She wasn't there.
Oh, I see.
But a guy who does home smart technology for homes, my wife's interior designer, and she hooked us up over email a month or so ago, and we must meet and chat, and then he was at the Metro Bank. So it's just a small, big, small world that we...
It's six in. Degrees it of separation with anything, isn't it, when it comes to relationship building, because, you know, I mean... Going back to Katrina at Thackeray Williams, you know, she came on our WhatsApp group and I was like, oh my God.
There she is.
20 years ago I worked there. You know, so yeah.
She's such an amazing person. Okay, we're going to have a little bit of a comfort break now, guys. So I'm going to turn the microphones off and I will remember to turn them on for Ben's interview. So please come back. Yeah, please come back and listen to what Ben's got to say. And there'll be a couple of adverts and then... Just a song that I've done for Jackie, which is Reach Out, I'll Be There, because she will be there if you need her. So that's what we're doing now.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Advertising your business can sometimes feel like you're trapped down a well, waiting for someone to respond. Choosing to market your business with fuzzy logic, you won't just be heard, you'll be seen. We offer website, social media and content creation packages that are fully bespoke to you and your business. And the best thing about it, we're affordable. So stop hiding and boost your digital presence using the power of fuzzy logic. Visit www.fuzzy.studio for more information.
Confusion until happiness is done. Of IT headaches? Slow computers? Security worries? Lost files? Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly, securely, and stress-free. Call 0179 5342362 now and get your IT sorted.
Tired of business networking that feels like hard work? It shouldn't be a chore. It should be a chance to grow. Join the Synergy business community and connect with like-minded professionals right in your area. We provide the opportunities to boost your brand's visibility and growth without the stress. Stop wishing for better contacts. Start building them. Visit synergynetworkingevents.co.uk today or call us at 077-699-43756.
Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
Okay, now we go to Ben. So Ben, tell us a bit about your business. When did you start?
Yes, thank you, Linda. So, Ben Miller Marketing went for the Ron Seal approach at naming the brand. just, you know, makes life easier, actually. And I've been doing it on my own for almost a year now. Prior to that, I was in marketing for 20-ish years. Let's go with that. Always in B2B. So I started at a law firm, Bristow's, big IP law firm in London. Went to a digital agency for 7 years when digital went from being having a website to pretty much everything. So it was a great time to be there working with that. The kind of the cream of the crop in that time. The agency grew from 20 to 120 and then got bought by WPP. So it was really, really exciting time to be in that environment. Then moved to a startup that went, went badly.
And was not successful, Ben.
Was not successful, yes, but it was going to run with startups anyway. And then I spent 7 years at what some of you might know as Glasses Guide, which is the old car values book. I was brought in to help transition from print to digital. Ended up being there for 7 years. They were part of a European group, so I did 7 years there at head of marketing for UK and then head of growth marketing across Europe. And then went to another scale up in the automotive space for a year and a half to help them build out their marketing function. Then took a local 12-month fixed-term contractor, probably the most challenging place I've ever worked, a local software provider. And after that, sort of went through a lot of processes where I'd get to final stage or wouldn't hear anything back from applications. And then I got an opportunity to do consulting for a financial services software provider, so they automate the production of fund fact sheets and reports in the finance sector. And so I thought, let's give that a go on my own. That one kind of, it's quite steady income. And then I've done stuff for a local property developer, helping them professionalise their marketing and give them a solid, consistent approach to what they do. And there's a few others in the pipeline that, that are hopefully going to land soon. But it's all B2B, it's all software and services, and that's where my quite a wealth of experience lies.
So explain to me software.
So anything you use in your laptop to do business. So they might sell CRM. So your CRM is a piece of software. So okay. Selling that to other businesses. So people selling software systems to other companies.
So it'd be like we're transitioning from NetHub across to another software, which is called Go High Level.
Yeah.
So both of those are the sort of things that you would go into people with?
Yeah, I guess the software is unique. Well, not unique, but it's often subscription-based.
Yes.
Often used across a business and across networks. So Salesforce is a software. Factbook is my finance client. They provide software specifically for the automated production of fund fact sheets, client reports, things like that. So it's software often tailored for an industry specific need. So at Glasses, for example, we killed the printed guide because you just couldn't get all the models of car in there.
No.
You know, frankly, was the biggest issue, but also the user experience wasn't as good. And that became software that people got to log into and dealers can access that information and data online.
I remember that. I mean, that software. Was, do you remember Glasses Guide?
Mm, yeah, I used to, and the little black book, wasn't it? That
yeah.
Was
black book was CAP, the biggest yeah. rival, but Glasses Guide was, yeah, that little yeah.
The little
big,
magazine, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like the thick as the yellow pages, but had yeah. to fit in your dealer's pocket. Had to fit through a letterbox.
Remember but you couldn't make the font.
Yeah,
and they'd, seeing all the yeah. men there with
and, yeah, you couldn't make the font any smaller because they couldn't read it. And, you know, we could only yeah. get so many models in there. And then it became, you know, about a third of the models you could fit in the book.
Wow.
Can then I just, sorry, Ben, to interrupt you. This CRM that you're talking about, I mean, I've just started with, like Linda, I've gone over to, it's actually a white label of Go High Level.
Yep.
When we look at CRM, you mean the customer relations management yep. thing where we collate all of our data, don't we?
Yes.
And then we can track our client's journey from first contact yep. through to anything they may ask for and start building a good relationship with them.
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. CRM is, well, the first contact that you know of. Mm. So there's 70% of
yeah.
engagement goes on, which is a challenge I have with a lot of founders and CEOs is they want to know, well, what one thing made them buy? Okay, if you want to go, yes, they did a branded search term, you know, how they knew of your brand. So you can't, you know, if you did that, yeah. you just put all your money into branded search and you'd soon be in trouble. Mm-hmm. But yes, the CRM is, yeah, we
and that's
your client
all,
relationship
it's not something that physically sits on your laptop or
no,
your
software
hard drive.
Hosted in the cloud.
It's in yeah. the cloud, isn't
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same with what, you know, Glasses Guide Digital is hosted in the cloud and you know, software that's yeah. accessible from anywhere.
So when you do a strategy for a client, what approach do you take in regards to doing their strategy for them?
So the first thing is actually to not do marketing, is to do the research part. So, right. And that's what a lot of people miss. They kind of jump straight to doing adverts because that's what they think they need to be doing and there's a quick outcome. But what I've done with clients is look at their existing clients, their customer base, what they as a business think they stand for. It's quite good to do a survey of the founders or senior stakeholders in the business and then do a very similar one with some clients and see where they align and where they diverge. And where they align will give you 3 to 5 core pillars or messaging hooks that you should use repeatedly because you believe that's what you do and your clients can validate it. And that's probably what differentiates you from your competitors. So they're the things you should keep repeating and banging on about and the benefits of those.
So can you do that with any industry?
Yeah. Yeah, mm. absolutely.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And that's, and we do get saturated with all this stuff with marketing, you know, on social media, everything, but
yeah.
that's really drilling down and you yeah. know, giving confidence to
and
people.
It helps understand your ideal customer personas, ICPs. Yeah. And what their pain points are that you can help yeah. them overcome or address or wait, whether it's saving their time, making them more money, reducing risk, whatever your product does. And don't tell them it's AI. That's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
What's important is what problems it solves for them and whether or not it uses AI is irrelevant
yeah.
to the person buying it. Yeah, it's just a bugbear that everything now is something AI, and the AI bit will disappear over time because it'll be a standard.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate? Sorry, Jackie. How do you do? So, say if we were looking at Synergy's ideal customer persona.
Yeah.
All of my customers are so different.
Well, what do they have in common? So, if you ask them, if you send out a survey,
they all want referrals, don't they? I suppose
they all have a business, don't they?
That's well, they all have a business. Yes. Yeah.
That's your ideal client.
Yeah.
Whether it's me as Bernie, whether it's Ben doing marketing, they all want.
Or whether it's Thackeray Williams.
But it's more, why do they choose to network with Synergy as opposed to X, Y, and Z?
Yes, yeah.
And that's what differentiates you from the other networking groups. And that's the reason that you exist. So there's reasons you founded Synergy versus the other options out there.
Mm.
So I do surveys with you and Chris. Get your results, surveys with clients, get those results. Then I would use AI to find, right, okay, where do these align and where do they diverge? and the pieces they align on will be what you think Synergy stands for and why you founded it, and where people go, yeah, that's why we chose Synergy and that's why we love Synergy.
Mm.
And that's where you...
How long does that take you to do, that first bit? Does it depend on how big the company is?
It's getting the survey responses from clients is the is the hardest part.
Yeah, because some of them probably don't even know the answer, do they?
They'll be able to tell you why they like networking, why they like the Synergy network, why they do that as a versus others, what makes Synergy different, how do you feel when you come out of a Synergy event versus other events? There's loads, all those kind of... Linda's dancing. Well, I think it's dancing. And that, yeah, that just gives you a unique perspective, because everyone, you know, just networking is networking to a lot of people. But if Synergy networking is a relaxed environment where people don't have to stand up and present for 20 minutes and there's no pressure to deliver X amount of referrals, that's kind of, you kind of know that anyway. But there'll be other things that will come out of the survey of, oh, I didn't know really people chose us for that reason. So I've had a couple of clients that I've done the surveys for, and it took a real... They took real persuading to, oh no, we know why people choose us. And a few things came back, and they've been banging on about ESR. I won't tell which client it was, but in their messaging, but that wasn't the reason anyone chose them. So they've said, well, we either need to forget that altogether immediately or work on it, and actually that's important to us, so we want to get that message out there more.
Combine and align the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite eye-opening. And, you know, in any... Unless you've invented something brand new, there's always going to be competitors.
Mm.
And from afar, oh, they'll do the same thing. But when people start researching you, they'll pick you for certain reasons. And if your client testimonials are validating what you want to stand for as a business and what differentiates you, yeah, you're not going to appeal to some people, but that's fine, because they're not your target audience anyway. Mm. And that's another big...
Yeah.
When you boil down to an ideal customer persona, it means, but we're not appealing to these, and we're not appealing to... And if you try to appeal to any to everyone, you'll resonate with no one. Because is that for me or not? I'm not quite sure. Whereas if you're really clear, no, this is... If you're in IT and you struggle with X, Y, and Z, and A, B, and C, and really narrow it down, then that allays a lot of their fears and a lot of their resistance to buying, because they know that you're for them. And yes, you will lose some, but you'll win far more as well.
And you build better relationships with your clients, because the clients that aren't really looking for you, when you appeal to everybody else, you don't have that same connection.
Yep.
So therefore you are dealing with unhappy clients then, people who might want refunds because they're pernickety about stuff, or, you know, if there's not that relationship there. Whereas, you know, you can have 3 really happy clients. I mean, hopefully you've got more than that. I'm just using that as an example, but you could have 3 really happy clients who would give you glowing testimonials and be delighted with you. And, you know, that would make your day, make your year, and it would show on your online presence. But you get 10 unhappy clients who you're not really connected with because you're not hitting the point with them, and it can do your business so much damage.
Yeah.
So what's the next step once you've done the survey then?
So then we take that back, give them, or work on positioning and messaging. So this is what you stand for as a business. This is what differentiates you, all based on that information, and everything else that they might have to hand already. They might have vision and mission statements. A lot of companies don't, of a certain sizes, as you get kind of bigger and you have more staff, you kind of need them, you know. It really helps with recruiting as well, because you can go, this is what we stand for. This is our mission and vision. This is how we like to work. This is how we like to be perceived by our clients. This is what they expect from us. And it helps in that regard.
Do you help them with that?
With the...
Their mission statement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And once you've got the surveys from the founders and clients and partners, if you have a lot of your work comes through partner referrals, why do they people refer their clients to you rather than all the other options out there? So you could have 3 surveys. You could do a staff survey as well if you've got enough people with a point of view to get across. And it just really helps standardize a consistent tone of voice and message that resonates with your audience, that makes you stand out from everyone else who does the same thing as you do on the surface.
Have you got a mission statement?
I have, yeah, but I've done quite a lot of work around this area for me personally. I also think, and tell me if I'm wrong, Ben, but values really play a big role in that mission statement, you know, what your personal values are. But when you've got, you know, like you've got a partnership of 10 different partners, take a typical law firm, you know, 10 particular partners, they've all got different values. How do you align all of that? What do you do with that?
There will still be consistencies across that. Like you mentioned Thackeray Williams earlier, and you both said, oh, they're a lovely law firm.
Yeah.
Why do you... I see you work there as well. So why? If we ask you why, and if they, you know, as their clients or people that know them, that would come to the fore across all those partners. And the partners will, the ones that have stayed there, will work there for certain reasons.
Yeah.
And it does all feed in. It sounds a bit wishy-washy and airy-fairy, and I'd be the first to admit that to some degree, to some people. But if you don't get that right, and you spend loads of money on adverts and you rush in and you think, oh, we're always posting on social, but we're getting, but if you're not resonating with your the customer percentage you've created as a result of those surveys and knowing what makes them tick, and don't ignore existing customers. There's another bugbear that I worked at one company and they just invoiced once a year. There's no other engagement with customers. And they just invoice the finance department in the hope that no one would notice and it would just get paid and they wouldn't cancel. But there was nothing, the only time they hear from a customer is if they had a problem or they left. So
like
there was
Microsoft 365.
Yeah, and there was no checking in, there was no how's things going, there's no automated through the CRM, you can just automate onboarding and adoption is key. When you've won a new client, especially with software businesses, B2B software businesses, their adoption and onboarding, you need to get them using it as quickly and efficiently as possible. And
so did you do that with that company? Did you get them using
that? Well, they didn't have the systems at the time. Right. Quite a legacy business. You probably guess who I'm referring to. But but there were things we could do. We could say, right, the first 3 months after someone signs up, let's send them all the how-to videos and guides. Second quarter, right, an outbound customer call. So customer service shouldn't just be sitting there waiting for the phone to call. They should be outbound as well, just to make sure they... And if you've got Utopia and you've got usage stats, you can monitor, okay, usage is dropping off for that client. Let's get in there quickly and see, is there a problem? Oh, yeah, so-and-so's left the company and there they had the login. Or, yeah, we're really struggling to use this part of it. And you can address it before renewal comes up and then you're trying to convince them in a one-month window before they're up for renewal and it becomes a lot harder. Just being proactive in client retention engagement. And I've gone off a tangent here, but my point where it's there that they've got all the information you need or a lot of insight that you need when you're building out your ideal customer personas and why people what they use about your system, why they like it. I've been at other places where we think it's a certain feature or a certain action or a certain outcome that the software delivers that clients really, really like. But actually it turns out once we surveyed them, actually it was something completely different. And that, then you pull that back into your messaging and focus on that.
It's funny, actually, because for me, I think it's really important to stay in touch with customers. And obviously, I see them when they come to the events. And I can be a bit of a nag if they don't come, to be fair, I think. But I feel like I should ring them more. I mean, I've spoken to Jackie a few times anyway on the phone, but I feel like I should be more engaged. But I just literally haven't got time to be more engaged.
But if you've got Go High Level, are you working with Hayden?
Yes, yeah.
So he can set things up, right? Send this, this, and this. If people don't open this, this, and this email,
he'd be able to see.
Automate a text message. If they don't respond to five things, then give them a call. So you're not thinking like you've got to call everyone because you'll have the core that's engaged and proactive. So you focus. It's the same for big B2B software companies. They should be phoning the clients that aren't using the product to make sure what's the problem, how can we help you solve it before it becomes a really big issue and they don't renew. And the ones that are really engaged and using it a lot, well, they're the... That's your testimonial gold mine, and that's the clients you approach for that rather than just trying to get anyone. Use that data, especially now, unless you're in a legacy business that still is, systems don't talk to each other. But I think we're getting more to a place now where that doesn't exist as often. But yeah, they're a gold mine of insight and information. And, you know, it's still true. It's easier to keep an existing client than it is to win a new one. So don't.
Well, we use iTrust, don't we? So, you know, we get loads of testimonials on there. So my challenge now is getting those testimonials from iTrust to Google reviews, because obviously it's great getting them on iTrust. And Nick has said to me, well, you know, you can use them in your social media, which yes, I can. I've got to cut and paste them and yeah, do it. Whereas if they put them on Google, it's there for everyone to see straight away, and it helps with our SEO. So, you know, I really want to say to people, would, you know, you can do it anonymously on there. If you're not going to be anonymous, please do it on a Google review as well to help us with our SEO.
Yeah.
Which is really important.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that you can do a Google review for them, because my wife gets that. They send her an email, oh, you can, could you do this for me? I haven't got the time. Or so you can't. That's the whole point.
Yeah, you need to send them the link.
I've had thousands of five-star reviews if I could just do them. So
yeah.
If you've got your Go High Level now, what you could do is, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but you could embed that link into follow-up emails and say, if you're happy, you know,
please do a Google review. Yeah. When we first started, I think we got 25 within the first month. It was amazing. And then it sort
Did
of,
I give you one?
I don't know. I'll have a look. Yeah, and then it completely slowed down. And so, you know, we've got to start asking people to do that as well. So once you've done the surveys, you've then gone through their values and everything like that. Then what do you do?
It depends what's gone before. So if they've had marketing resources, they've done anything where there's any valuable data or insight to be gleaned, and that forms part of the mix. So, you know, they might have tried certain channels or tried webinars or events that haven't worked, and it's just double check, well, didn't they work because the messaging wasn't right because you were just blasting sales messages all the time or whatever reason. But yeah, analyze that data. And once you've got an idea of what's gone before and what's worked and hasn't worked, and you can validate that forever, but you'll get some insight, and you've got your ideal customer personas, like where do they hang out, how do they like to digest information. More and more is video and short form. That's just the way the world's going, but a lot of companies still do 10 page white papers and then gate them give you no value in exchange for information, because they're always just trying to capture data.
My CapCut has been my hero. Did you use CapCut?
Yeah, video editing.
Yeah, my grandson put me on that. Wow, amazing.
Yeah. you'll still have companies that are, we're not giving this for free. Well, no one's going to give you their information nowadays for a 10-page white paper. It depends. Depends what you're selling.
Yes.
Who your audience is. Like some customer personas, you might have done the research and they love long-form content. Maybe. But you need that content mix anyway, just using that as an example. But yeah, where are people? What do they like how do they like to consume their information?
And where are most of your customers people?
Mostly on LinkedIn, because I'm working with B2B businesses. There'll be LinkedIn's plays a heavy part in it. And then depending on the sector, so they'll attend certain events within that sector. So it's worth having a presence at those events, depending on what you do. Like, sponsoring awards works if people know what you do from your logo. Because if they don't understand what you do from your logo, don't just pay to put your logo in places. You know, that was a big lesson from previous companies. They would sponsor these awards and get nothing out of it because no one knew what the business did. You know, if you're IBM, fine, your logo works because people know what you do. But if you're Ben Miller Marketing, although that's the Ron Seal approach, it helps because they would know what I do from that. So that's a bad example. But Synergy, for example, you know, if you just, I think the logo has Synergy Networking, doesn't it?
Does,
so again, you've kind of addressed that.
Yes, yeah.
But having events where you can go and speak. So we take a conscious decision to have a speaking slot at any events we did in the past. This was like glasses, because we were going through a change. Everyone thought we were still the book. And when the book didn't exist, they thought the business didn't exist. So that was the challenge we had there, was, well, now we've just modernized and given you access to far more cars, which means you can value more cars more accurately, which means that, you know, your profits are better. You don't miss a sale because you can value the car with the printed book. And, you know, we need to go to events and not just have the Glasses Guide logo, which people kind of thought, is that still going?
Yep. I wouldn't have known, would you? I wouldn't have known it's still going.
Yeah, no. Exactly. But I think people in the industry do.
In the
hopefully.
Industry, their ideal persona. Yeah, they know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, the knock-on effect of, everyone knew what Glasses Guide was because you'd go to the dealership and they'd put out this physical. Yes, in a digital world, it's kind
of... I want one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was.
I was going to say we had all of them going back to number one in the office.
Wow.
The very first. Yeah, and you could see how thick they got over the years. Anyway, but once that physical... We're going off at a tangent here. But once the physical
it's right,
book disappeared, what is Glasses Guide? It's mm. completely changed mm. the messaging mm. and the target audience, because it wasn't just dealers, it's finance companies, insurance companies, body shops and repair. We had all the data for everything from the cars, from manufacturers building cars. We could tell them from the data across all manufacturers what sold well in certain regions, what extras people paid for in Sweden versus Spain.
Wow.
And help them, what was it called? Car to market. It's taking car to market and helping them build cars that are more likely to sell well in certain regions.
So that's why they make various adjustments to cars depending yep. on where they're going.
Yeah, like mm. heated seats would probably sell better in Norway than they do in Spain, I would imagine, as an optional
no,
extra.
I'd like it.
But yeah, I mean, they'd know that. That's an obvious one. Mm. You'd hope that the manufacturers would know that. But there'd be other nuances that they mm. potentially wouldn't pick up on because they wouldn't have the data across all manufacturers. But they had the data right to disposal and for body shops and repairs. Anyway, we've gone off a massive tangent there. But yeah, it was just when it's not, I think so that's where the software side of things is not a tangible product that you're selling. So your messaging and recall needs to be even more important, I think.
Yeah, I saw a post a couple of weeks ago. A friend of mine put a post up on LinkedIn and she was saying, you know, the value of, she was questioning the value of downloading a video or a film. She'd bought a film, I think, from Netflix. And she was saying, it just doesn't feel the same as going out and buying a DVD and seeing the DVD mm. on the shelf, you know, in your lounge, as what it did when you stream it from Netflix.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing. Someone said on Netflix, they don't advertise the same shows in the same ways to different people.
Mm.
So, like, I think Stranger Things was the example they looked. And if you watch a lot of other romance things, the images they show you will be the romance yeah. between Mike and Eleven, if you know your Stranger Things. But if you were watch a lot more horror there, we'd show you a picture of the Demogorgon, which is the... Mm. And, you know, so they're playing on emotion rather than a...
Yeah, an emotion.
If you went into HMV to buy a DVD, it'd be the same cardboard cutout for everyone. So it yeah. offers opportunity as well because of that data.
I see that, actually, because I've got access to... My children can log into Netflix, their Netflix on mine. I can log into their Netflix, my son's, my daughter's. So if you go into my daughter's, there's lots of fantasy. We're both reading dragon books at the moment. So, yeah, no self-help books. They're out the window at the moment. So, you know, romance, dragons, all that sort of thing. My son is definitely more action horror. And I'm definitely love stories. God knows why. But, you know, that's just what I'm reading at the moment because it's helping my psyche. So you go into all of them, and it's showing me the love stories, Elle the fantasy films, and John the action films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That ties back to the buying committee in B2B businesses. You have mm. HR who might want to know that your product's going to be easy to use and for everyone in the business. You'll have IT who want to make sure it's not going to, you know, passes all the pen tests and has 99.9% uptime and... isn't going to go down. Legal is going to be very risk averse. So your messaging to each of those stakeholders needs to be slightly different.
Mm.
And they're all on the buying committee. You'll have a champion who that's your main hook, and that might be the mm. first person you speak to. Then, you know, working for software companies that are sort of 10 to 15 grand a month for a 3-year contract, that's a huge investment.
Mm.
And so that buying committee is going to be have multiple stakeholders across the business. So you need to appeal to all of them and help your champion get you through.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because you going back to the SEO question, the different learning styles and different personalities. See, if you take the VARC system and you're looking at, do you know about the VARC system? It's a learning system that's used in schools. So it's visual, audible, read and write, and kinesthetic. So I'm definitely kinesthetic. So if you start talking to me in emotion terms, you know, you start saying, I feel. Mm-hmm. But then we're looking at videos. If you appeal to all of that, that really helps with the marketing, doesn't it? When you yeah. look at those different personality types and the different learning styles.
Yeah, yeah, they'll be your primary stakeholder within the business. So depending mm. on what you're selling, but you will have to at some point, if you're selling the bigger subscription models yeah. of software, convince procurement you're a safe yeah. pair of hands, and yeah, convince IT that your technology is up to scratch, and,
yeah.
and all of those different things.
Sorry, so, I wasn't clear about that. But the question I think I was asking was, so you might have a video on there, but you could also have like a transcript because somebody sat on a train. No, that was me, Ben, that wasn't you. Well, if you're sat on a train and you haven't got your headphones, you can't watch the video, you know.
Yeah.
Or you don't want to watch the video. You might want to read. You might be more of a reader.
Yeah, and the good thing now with technology, so if you do manage to get a video, and AI is going to make that more and more easy. Sorry, I was going to go off another tangent, but let's get to address that question first. But from that, you can produce longer form of content or snippets. I did with our finance client, they put a lot of work into reviewing the top 10 fact sheets of 2025. So I think they reviewed over 200 fund fact sheets. And to a certain extent, they automated some of it. And then they added a qualitative review from their personal experience. So from that, we extrapolated the meet the judges, behind the scenes judging. We then created a SWOT analysis of the top 15 fact sheets. We did what the top 10 did differently. So from one long form bit of content, we've got loads of short ones. But I need to get them on video. That's my mission for the year. Because they want, you know, we need faces behind these businesses now with software and AI, meaning anyone can do any software with any kind of no coding. Half an appetite to do it. It's reassuring to people to know that there's people with 20 years experience in financial reporting behind the scenes, making sure it's doing what it needs to do and supposed to do. Yeah. But from that one piece of content, you can create different formats for the different people on that buying committee. So it sounds daunting. Oh my God, it's bad. I haven't got enough time to write one piece for one person. But actually that's where AI is really useful.
Yeah, it's
and we're having your personas for your buying committee really helps, because you could ask, you know, please rewrite this long form content into short format for head of HR, focusing on the feeling outcomes of what the software delivers. Right, address all the risk profiling of IT and procurement or whatever, and take out, so you can deliver that broad mix of content far easier now than ever. But that's where I think the research bit and the ICPs are even more important, because AI, you can scale rubbish at an alarming rate, it'll do more harm than good. So just taking a breath. Okay, let's talk to our customers, find out what appeals to them about us appeals to them, why they chose us, why they didn't almost choose us. This was Rory Sutherland said he came across a company and they asked a question, what made you nearly not buy from us? Or buy our product, which I thought was a great question, because you can't ask people that don't buy it. So what is that? Because to someone else, that will be what prevents them buying. You can, anyway. So if you, I think, you know, I studied marketing at university. I'm one of that rare breed that's doing what I studied. And yes, it's wildly different. The channels are different. The metrics are different. It's far more measurable. But that psychological aspect and that first steps still should be the same. And I think the fact that you can scale rubbish quicker than ever is even more important now than it ever has been.
One of the things that people say about marketing, though, is that you can't measure it. So can you measure it?
You can. Depends which part of marketing, which element of marketing. So there's a lot of studies and science. Field and Binet did a lot of studies on the long and the short of it, they called it. So it's long-term brand building, which is an investment in future growth. That you shouldn't expect instant returns. And then you've got your activation stuff. So people that are in market, and you can use buying signals and intent signals to target those. That's where your immediate short-term measurable impact comes. But generally, if inbound leads are going up overall, does it matter if you can measure it?
I mean, to be fair, with us, we've seen huge growth, really. I mean, we've gone from zero to 153 members in less than 18 months. And that doesn't really take into account all the people who've come along as visitors. I mean, I've been doing networking for years, and I would say the only other networking group that I've seen have as many visitors as us is probably the Chambers of Commerce. And they've been going
many years.
Yeah, loads of years. You know, we consistently get, I mean, you know, Tunbridge Wells last night, 10. I mean, Ashford, the visitors are outweighing the members by a massive majority.
Do you know where they're coming from or why they're coming?
Well, we are paying for SEO on our website, which, you know, I didn't particularly want to, but I thought I've got to have someone do something. So again, that's gone from zero views to 650 in the first 3 months views on our website. Yeah, and that is going up even more. And we saw a drop at Christmas, but then it's going up again. So you think to yourself, is it worth this? But it's put us on the front page for business networking in Kent. I mean, that is huge.
Well, that's, obvious keywords to target, and that's great results. And when I say, it doesn't matter if you can't measure it, this is just from experience. We, again, at Glasses, we had a PR agency, and we got loads and loads of coverage, and we weren't doing sales pitches. It was all about fastest selling cars in your area. We had all that data. Mm-hmm. So it was useful information to dealers. It was about seasonal trends and topics. So it was all on, key, insightful, useful information to our target audience. And was it salesy? And PR mentions were going up and up and up, and sales and inbound leads were going up and up and up, and everything was good. And then there's takeover of the business at senior level, cost cutting, your general thing. And they wanted to get rid of PR because we couldn't measure directly what impact it was having. But we all knew we tried to make the case as many ways as possible. Like, you can see the correlation between, sure enough, pulled it out, mentions got dropped off, and then leads soon followed. So, but we couldn't directly say they read that article in that magazine or that online on AM Automotive Management Live. We couldn't prove that they had read or hadn't read that article, but we could prove that, and there's other factors, so it's not always as clean cut as we'd like it to be, but we did loads more PR and leads went up, and we stopped doing PR and leads went down, and everything else stayed fairly level during that time.
PR is amazing, and I love PR. I mean, funnily enough, I used to be lucky when I was running the dating agency. I was always asked to go on BBC Radio Kent to speak about dating. I'd be on there this Friday talking about it, and I'd be in Kent Life talking about it. And, so I always made myself available around times, Christmas time when couples – break up. So New Year, I was there, and Valentine's, I was there. And it's finding those times for networking, because I think PR is really, really important. So I think I need to align myself with more editors, with more business magazines.
Yeah.
But because I think PR is so important.
Yeah. And if your search volumes are big enough, then you should be able to see an increase in branded search terms. And I take that as a sign of PR, for example, being successful, because there is still that unmeasurable, and there is still 70% of touch points happen before you even know who someone is, if they accept cookies, which is becoming less of a, more people are declining cookies now, or they're being particular about which ones they will accept and won't accept. So in some ways, it's going to be harder to measure how did you hear of us? And then you're relying on sales to fill in the form in the drop down, which they forget to ask the client, or the client forgets how they heard of you. So I think measuring what you can is important. But obviously, if you're measuring everything, then you just get lost in the mire of metrics. What are your priorities? Marketing qualified leads going up, revenue's going up, site traffic's going up, inquiries going up. That's four things you want to measure. Then forget about everything else, unless you see spikes or. There's always... Yeah, you can go on forever, but I think, try not to measure too much, and always remember you can't measure everything.
So tell us, because we're getting to near the end of the show, tell us who your ideal client is, Ben.
So the sweet spot is, I have to say about my ideal customer persona now.
Your ideal customer persona.
This is a practice what I preach. Small to medium-sized businesses selling software and services to other businesses, so B2B. And they've either got junior marketing in-house, but they need a bit more strategic direction, or they're a fork in the road where they're, okay, we've been doing this ourselves and muddling by, but I think we need to standardize this so we can scale it and perhaps do it properly. So they're looking at an agency, which are great because they've got loads of experience and expertise, but they can be quite expensive and paying for a lot for project management. A junior hire, which again, great, they're there full-time, but they're often doing just what the founder tells them, which is very much salesy in most instances, or haven't got that experience, or the founder doesn't have time to give them proper direction, or someone like me, which should be a fractional marketing director who will help with the strategy, but also help implement that strategy to some degree. So I'll help with content and social and email, but I'd probably outsource SEO and the technical things like that. So that's kind of where businesses realise, right, we've been getting by to date, but let's take our marketing to an upper level. And they're the three options they tend to have, and they've all got pros and cons, but that would be my target audience when they're in that window, that 3-5% window of the addressable market that's in market at any one time, which is why a lot of marketing is really important to focus on the 97% who aren't in market in B2B. And that's where you're building your trust and familiarity and that side of it.
So what's a small company for you? Sorry, Linda.
That's right.
It kind of depends on who they're targeting as well. So small would be sort of 10 to 12 people.
Okay.
Medium would be 25 to 30 in my in my eyes. Mm-hmm. But I've worked with other or spoken to other companies that have got large organisations, but they've got very junior marketing team at the moment and just need a bit more, someone with a bit more experience and strategic direction to guide them in what, you know, what to focus on, what has and hasn't worked, not getting distracted by the new shiny toys and making sure, right, or they want to do that first bit. They haven't done that first bit yet of the client research and surveys and ideal customer personas.
So is that where you would go in and you'd help them create a strategic plan?
Yeah, strategic,
and
focus on this.
Training their in-house. Yeah,
you're selling IT consultancy, get off of TikTok, don't worry about Instagram, or whatever it might be. Focus on LinkedIn if that's where you're, you know, what's working, what isn't right now. But just giving them a bit more focus and direction on strategy and what their messaging should be. Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get hold of you, Ben, how would they get hold of you?
Yeah, so benmillermarketing.co.uk. It's my website, and then on LinkedIn, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. There's a few posts there about marketing not working, which some of those things might ring true. And if they do, I could help you in that regard.
Brilliant. Okay, so what's your website? Ben Miller Marketing?
BenMillerMarketing.co.uk.
Brilliant, okay. And do you have a phone number they can ring? Or?
Yeah, it's on the website, but it's 07940-934-239.
Brilliant, okay, fantastic. That's really interesting, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I've got a few nice tips and tricks to take away with me today. Thank you.
And I think you know, the thing is that I think a lot of people, I also think you really align well with some of the people that we've got that actually offer marketing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they could, you've met Sam Fuzzard, haven't you?
Yep, yep.
Has he asked you to be on his podcast?
No.
Okay, I think he need to be. I'll mention it to him because he's doing a podcast just across the way.
Yeah, I've seen the rookie CEO.
That's it. Yeah, So basically we at Synergy offer 50% off of that. But I think a lot of marketing companies don't offer that first look at the persona, and they don't look at that. They come in and they just start doing the marketing.
Yeah. And when you say to someone what's marketing, you'll get five different answers because, oh, it's social media. Oh, it's doing emails. Oh, it's advertising.
I know.
Oh, it's going to events. But it's marketing is the mix of all of that. And it's the promotion and it's the sales piece and it's the demand generation and the lead generation. It's all of that. But I think most people think of the tactical piece because that's where you end up at and that's where they can see instant impact or they think they can. But you are doing yourself a disservice and you're spending money that could be working a lot harder if you've done that first bit. But I've had a couple of clients that have got them to a point where, you know, they're about to sign up and they've gone, I think we just need to run and just start on doing LinkedIn ads. I've tried my best, and I think that's absolutely fine. It's up to you, but can you just speak to some clients first and get five things to focus on? If you don't want to do the whole survey piece and pay someone to do that, I strongly advise you. If you don't have the budget, that's understandable. We all go through. We all have to allocate what we've got, but speak to clients before you invest in doing loads of paid ads or creating a load of assets. Because
I can imagine so many people go with, I did. So when I first started my dating agency, I went with a young girl because I thought she's young, she knows what she's talking about. So I'll give it to her. She set up four Facebook accounts for me. I've still got one that pops up and says my birthday's on the 4th of December because she put the same birthday as her. So I get happy birthday on the 4th of December. And really, she had no clue. But of course, I had no clue that she had no clue. And that must be the same even now because so many companies say, oh, you know, I can't see the point. So we don't need social media. Yeah. We don't need marketing. Well, are still saying that.
You might not need social media, but you don't know unless you've done the analysis of your ideal customers and where they hang out and where they engage.
Yes, because some could just hang out in reading the magazine that pops through the door, couldn't they?
Yeah.
But absolutely. How do you know?
Exactly. So we need to ask them, where did you hear about us? What do you read? Where do you go for your business information? Yeah. So it's critical.
So, have you done a survey on LinkedIn at all, asking people where they go?
Have I?
Yeah, have you done one?
Not done a broad one, no.
Yeah.
I should do.
Might be, yeah, well, I was just
practice
thinking.
What I preach.
Well, it might be worth doing on Synergy is what I'm thinking. You're doing a survey saying, you know, where do you, where do you look for your ideal customer?
Yeah, my ideal customer. My ideal customer is on LinkedIn, but I'm thinking, you know, that's a great question because that would be ideal for me to do a survey on that.
Because you're similar to me with the, I mean, with the dating agency, I couldn't put something on saying, are you single? Yes, no. And you can't really say, are you suffering with burnout? Yes, no.
Well,
you've got to be quite subtle.
Yeah.
You've got to be quite subtle about what you're asking, haven't you?
Yeah,
so it's.
But wouldn't you be using, I don't know if we've got time, wouldn't you be using Facebook for that and you could target if they're in a relationship or not on Facebook?
Yeah, back in the day,
not
using
dating now,
before Facebook, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Before Facebook, I couldn't, obviously. But I didn't even think of that when I was using Facebook. I just thought, oh, that seems to be the thing everyone's doing. I suppose I better get on there. And B and I kept on telling me to get on there, to be honest. They are very good with their training and everything.
But I think one takeaway is if you're doing your marketing yourself, just don't think about the features, especially from a software point of view. It's the benefits and the outcomes that your users. That's the reason they buy you. They don't buy you because you have this button that does this and because you're AI. They buy you because you can help solve their problems and make their life easier. So just make sure that that is in your messaging.
It's funny because I think with networking, and I'm sure you probably agree, I mean, you said about how much more confident you feel. I mean, I think that first one you came to was mini one-to-ones, wasn't it?
Yes, it
yeah,
was.
I thought it yeah. was. So it was a very different one. And when we have smaller numbers, they do tend to be mini one-to-ones to start off with, or two-to-ones.
Yeah, there it was opening because I went and expecting everyone to be really polished, like they are on social media, like on the ones on LinkedIn that you see all the time. Your algorithms are polished, and it's just people being people trying to, you know, who are experts in their field.
Mm.
They're not all polished, pristine. You know, we're just real people trying to do our jobs and make a living and, you know, help
and,
other
and
people.
Although,
and that really came through at that first session.
Well, that was actually a Kings Hill Football Club business partnership event, and I was running it for them. And the great thing about that, although it's a very local niche, you know, it was in aid of the football club, and I was just doing the events for them, but that was big businesses in there. You know, so you had some good businesses in the room with that one.
I think
one.
Simon was in that very first one.
Simon, yeah, and Thackeray Williams were in there. Yeah. Thackeray Williams really did support because a lot of them are parents and live on there. But it'd be worth you visiting Kings Hill. I mean, Ryan Briggs is on the show, I think, the start of next month, and he works with some huge companies, Coca-Cola. I mean, he's now having to, his training courses, he's now having to get them in other languages. He was saying it's now got, because the companies he works with are worldwide companies. Yeah. So I don't think they'd have a problem with budget, which is a refreshing thing to hear, I'm sure. So, Jackie, just tell everyone again how they can get hold of you, please.
Yeah, I'm going to now review my logo after listening to Ben. But my website is jackiesansom.com, and you can contact me on the phone, and that's 077-37-278-158, or you can pop me an email on jackie@jackiesansom.com.
Brilliant. Ben?
Yes, benmillermarketing.co.uk, and that's ben@benmillermarketing.co.uk. I mean, just Google that and I will come up. But the phone number, if you can remember, is 07940-934-239.
Ben, all of our listeners are business owners and they're all organised and they're sitting there with a pen and paper. They write it down. What do you reckon?
That's one thing I wonder when people, you go past a billboard and they put all their contact information. You're like, how am I supposed to, if you're better off having one big logo with what you do, and that people remember that and Google it rather than, what was the phone number? Like, anyway.
Brand awareness is a whole nother thing, isn't it? I mean, I never understood brand awareness, I don't think. I mean, you know, I ran a social media business, and that social media business, running that with my daughter for 10 years, she had to explain the difference between sales and marketing. And then it was when I started understanding brand awareness with big companies But I was like, that's why they advertise on the side of a bus. That's why they have big signs. It's not because they think somebody's going to stop and buy their products. It's because they want to get their branding out there.
Well, I say that when someone comes to buy a fizzy soft drink, they think of Coke or Pepsi because it's the one that's front of mind.
Yeah,
it's the same with marketing. 97% of B2B decision making is or 97% of the addressable market for B2B software tends to be not in market at that time. So 97% of your marketing budget should go on brand awareness stuff or building trust and building recognition and demand. So when they are in that 3-ish% window, they think of you because 81% of B2B buyers buy from the first brand they think of.
And brand awareness is about building trust, isn't it? And that's why I think that's where social media does come.
And that's where the longer term metrics of leads going up over time. Yeah. Marketing isn't a short fix. Never has been, never will be.
No.
And that's just where it's critical. Don't do brand stuff and expect leads to generate in it tomorrow because then you'll think, well, marketing doesn't work.
No. Brilliant. Thank you so much, both of you, for being my guests. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Yeah, it's great.
And we look forward to, watch me on my TikTok.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye, everybody. Have an amazing day. And I hope I'll see some of you at the Whitsbury event this evening. Take care. Have a great day. Bye.
Hello, Kent businesses. Tired of networking events that don't deliver? Synergy Networking Events has got you covered, whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro. Our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. All for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment.
You've been listening to the Business Networking Show with Linda Cloak, John Turner, and Jill Russell. You've been listening to the Business Networking Radio Show with Linda Cloak and John Turner.